Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a pretty rigorous look at the world of commercial real estate.
Lots to cover.
We've gathered a stack of recent news, and it really seems to focus on two big forces. First, this kind of nationwide reckoning happening in retail.
Right. Big shifts there.
And second, the explosive growth, really targeted growth, right here in Dallas-Fort Worth. Our mission, it's simple. Quickly distill the key strategic intelligence you need.
Yeah, get through the noise a bit.
Exactly. We're looking at national instability versus local growth stories, giving you context on what these shifts mean for capital, for strategy, for managing assets here in DFW.
And the start of October, it really shows a clear bifurcation of the market, doesn't it?
Bifurcation? Explain that.
Well, you've got legacy retail, older office buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They're going through a structural reset, often painful.
Okay.
But at the same time, sectors driven by location, amenities, and increasingly technology. Think data centers, high-quality suburban DFW space.
Mm-hmm.
Those are thriving. They're attracting serious capital interest.
So two different stories playing out.
Precisely. We'll unpack the national retail strategies first, then zoom in on how Texas developers and inventors are actually capitalizing on some of this instability.
Okay, let's unpack this. And I guess we have to start with the elephant in the room. A massive real estate holder that, well, also sells coffee. Starbucks.
Mm-hmm. Big news from them.
They recently announced this huge restructuring, closing over 400 stores, layoffs for almost 1,000 non-retail employees. It's all part of a billion-dollar plan.
It is.
And the perspective shift is just incredible. One consultant we saw quoted said, basically, at this level, Starbucks is no longer a coffee company. It's a real estate company.
And that quote, that's really the key to understanding a lot of modern retail. Starbucks is strategically purging older urban stores. The ones that lack drive-thrus or, you know, big enough footprints.
Why those specifically?
Because the post-pandemic recovery just hasn't fully hit downtown foot traffic. It's still hovering around, what, 70% of pre-COVID levels?
70%? Wow. Okay, compare that to the drive-thru then.
Exactly. Drive-thru usage for coffee, just out of home coffee, hit a record 59% back in September.
59%.
So Starbucks is putting its money where it works, right? Renovating over 1,000 existing stores, trying to bring back that third place vibe. But only where the economics and the traffic patterns actually support it.
It's a huge gamble, though, isn't it? Costs versus convenience. But hang on, if they're closing 400 stores, how are they still seen as the most reliable retail tenant? Doesn't that just push risk onto the landlords in those, you know, failing urban spots?
That's a really critical question. And the consensus seems to be this restructuring. It's more fine-tuning than outright failure. By shedding those non-performing assets, they actually strengthen the overall brand, the credit, the strategic importance of what's left.
Okay.
So for developers, a post-restructure Starbucks might arguably be more desirable because they've doubled down on a proven format.
Hmm.
The drive-through, the quality suburban space. They're optimizing for reliability, really.
Interesting take. Okay. So that instability, it actually creates a massive opportunity elsewhere, right? Like the American Mall.
Mm-hmm.
As these big anchor tenants restructure or leave, the shopping center vacancy rate is ticking up nationally, up to 5.8%, I think, a 50 basis point jump year over year.
That's right. And that vacancy increase is forcing landlords to kind of rip up the old playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, you know, small local businesses often priced out.
Right.
Now we're seeing landlords actively seeking them out, offering shorter leases, even helping with fit out, just to get doors open and generate some buzz.
Got an example.
Yeah. We saw one deal mentioned where a local family restaurant took over a former chain pizza place in nearly 30% below the original asking rent.
30% below? That's significant.
It is. Landlords are getting creative.
And the shift, it fundamentally changes the property itself, doesn't it? Malls becoming more like destinations.
Exactly. Think gyms, spas, maybe urgent care clinics, unique local food spots, things that make people stay longer than just traditional shopping.
Extending that dwell time.
That destination creation is vital, especially now as national rent growth is slowing down. It went from, say, 4% right after COVID down to maybe 2% annually now.
So landlords can't just rely on rent hikes.
No. They need to create vertical value, make the whole place more valuable.
And we see that national volatility playing out elsewhere too, like the pharmacy sector.
Well,
yeah, it was all greens. Following their take private deal, there's about $6 billion in CMBS exposure tied directly to their properties.
$6 billion. And what's happening with their value?
Well, the cap rates on those net lease Walgreens assets, they're visibly rising. Up from the mid 6% range, now pushing towards 7% or even higher.
Signaling increased risk in the market's view.
Definitely. But the flip side is, the market expects those spots off in prime corners to backfill pretty quickly.
With what?
The other necessity tenants. Quick service restaurants, maybe more urgent care, discount grocers. It's a risk, yes, but also a pretty rapid conversion opportunity.
Okay, so that's the instability story. But then contrast that with, well, global confidence in certain spots. If Starbucks is wary of older urban locations, what makes a company like IKEA so bullish on, say, Manhattan?
Right.
The Inca Group just dropped $213 million on a 53,000 square foot property in Soho for a new urban store format.
That Manhattan deal is part of IKEA's much bigger, like, $2.2 billion U.S. expansion plan. It shows a real strategic shift for them, moving away from only doing those massive suburban big boxes.
So confidence in physical retail isn't dead.
Not in the right spots. This move shows confidence still exists for high-traffic city locations, provided the location is truly premium and the strategy fits the dense urban environment. It's a very high-stakes, very strategic placement by IKEA.
The lesson seems clear then. National players are making tough surgical choices about where to put their real estate capital. Let's pivot now. Let's focus the lens right here on DFW. The spirit of adaptation seems really strong here, creating totally new hubs.
Absolutely. DFW is a hotbed for this kind of thing.
Take Fort Worth. You've got the massive $1.7 billion Westside Village mega project. Robert Bass, Larkspur Capital, leading that. Their focus seems squarely on placemaking, creating community anchors, things that feel permanent.
And they're using really creative adaptive reuse to do it, like The Shed.
The Shed, tell me about that.
They're converting this sprawling 1920s industrial meat locker into a huge food and entertainment venue. We're talking 19,000 square feet inside, plus a massive patio.
Wow.
It's the definition of using historical assets to build modern community hubs. And that, in turn, dramatically boosts the value of everything around it.
Adaptive reuse. Sounds like it's also the lifeline for downtown Dallas, maybe.
Could be. Look at the Bank of America Plaza deal.
The Pickle, right. Everyone knows the Pickle.
That's the one. Developers secured $103 million in subsidies. The plan. Converted into a $409 million mixed-use tower.
Mixed-use meaning?
Hotel, event space, retail, and residential components all packed in.
One of the developers involved actually called it a lifeline for a CBD losing traction.
Which really highlights the challenge many downtowns face, not just here, but globally. And it shows how DFW is aggressively trying to solve it, chasing those mixed-use subsidies. It shows a real commitment from the city and developers to tackle high office vacancy by bringing in what downtowns often lack, retail and residential vibrancy. Life, basically.
This is where retail becomes more than just retail, right? It's almost a development necessity, not just an income stream. I remember hearing some Houston restaurateurs recently basically pleading with CRE pros.
Yeah. What'd they say?
They said, don't just see us as rent payers. See us as placemaking partners. Help us create the vibe.
That shift in thinking, that's absolutely the key for a successful vertical integration in these new DFW mixed-use projects. If you, as the developer, maybe take a slightly lower rent from that unique local restaurant or that cool specialty spa now,
right.
The foot traffic and the vibrancy they create drives up the value of your apartments and office space above them much faster than if you just leased to some vanilla national chain.
So creativity, partnership, that's paramount for DFW retail success today.
Absolutely. You got to view retail as an amenity for the whole project.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly to the macro environment, because the stress in traditional office, it's still pretty palpable nationally, especially for assets tied to maybe one big tenant like Office Properties Income Trust, OPI. Okay.
OPI. They recently defaulted on $30 million in interest payments. They're getting delisted from NASDAQ.
Ouch. Why? What's the core issue?
Their portfolio relies really heavily on the federal government as a tenant. About 17% of their space is concentrated in D.C. Their debt load was called unsustainable.
So is the risk here just financial mismanagement, or does OPI's trouble signal something bigger about relying on massive single credit government tenants?
I think it signals a clear vulnerability in that specific business model. When you concentrate your assets and depend so heavily on one massive tenant, especially one prone to budget fights and shutdowns like the federal government, you're exposed to extreme risk.
And that risk is immediate now, right? With the government shutdown that started October 1st.
Exactly. That shutdown threatens to seriously hit CRE demand across the board in D.C.
Yeah.
Retail, hospitality, office. And it could shave, what, up to 0.2 percentage points off national GDP growth each week it continues? It's a significant macro headwind.
What's fascinating, though, is how capital is reacting. It seems to be shifting its position within the capital stack itself.
Yeah, that's a really interesting dynamic. Institutional limited partners, LPs,
yeah,
they seem to be actually, well, hiding is maybe too strong, but definitely pulling back from traditional CRE equity right now.
Hiding where? Or shifting where?
They're drastically shifting allocations into real estate debt funds. Private credit. Those funds raised over $20 billion just in the first half of 2025.
$20 billion? Why debt instead of equity?
Because in an illiquid, uncertain market like this one, debt gets seniority. It's safer, relatively speaking. Debt funds can structure deals to get equity-like returns, but with lower risk. Because if the equity holder stumbles, the debt holder often has the first right to acquire the asset, potentially at a discount.
Ah, so they can wait out the market correction from a safer position.
Exactly. While maybe still generating decent returns. Investment volumes overall are still down, but they are ticking up slightly. The expectation is more capital flows back into equity maybe in 2026, once prices stabilize more.
Okay, so while traditional CRE navigates these challenges, the tech sector's need for physical infrastructure is just exploding. Especially here in Texas.
Oh, absolutely. Texas is ground zero for the real estate of the digital economy. It's incredible.
And the valuations we're seeing, they're driven by the AI boom, right? They seem to dwarf traditional real estate metrics.
They really do. Take Sermi REIT, Rick Perry-backed, based in Amarillo.
Oh, yeah.
They just raised $682.5 million in their IPO. And this is a pre-revenue company, mind you.
Pre-revenue. What's the valuation?
A whopping $12.5 billion. Just to build a massive 15,000-acre AI energy and data campus.
15,000 acres. And then there's Aligned Data Centers, also Texas-based.
Right. They were reportedly in talks recently to be acquired for somewhere around $40
billion. $40 billion. These numbers are just staggering.
They are. It shows institutional capital pivoting hard towards assets with what they see as almost guaranteed premium valuations, all driven by this massive, undeniable AI demand for physical computing space and power.
So when traditional assets are struggling just to find their price point.
Right. The real estate tied to digital infrastructure becomes the clear winner for those big pools of institutional money. It's where the growth story is undeniable right now.
Which brings us back nicely to the DFW office market. Because, like you said earlier, not all office is suffering equally. There's that bifurcation.
Definitely.
We saw news that PennyMac Financial, the mortgage lender, just signed a full building lease, 300,000 square feet.
Yep, in Carrollton.
Uh-huh.
And that was for a space that had been a pretty stubborn sublease listing for a while.
And it brings about 1,800 jobs to that area.
That's a huge deal for DFW. Ranks among the largest office leases for 2025 so far. And it just perfectly underscores that market bifurcation we talked about.
How so?
While the overall metro office vacancy rate is high, maybe around 25.2%, newer, amenity-rich suburban properties, especially in places like Carrollton, Plano, Frisco, they are attracting major tenants. It's the classic flight to quality.
So new office space, good amenities, good location, still winning.
Still winning big, yeah. Even while older, maybe less updated urban assets continue to struggle.
Okay, so wrapping this up, we've really seen a complex kind of two-speed market today, haven't we?
Absolutely.
National retail is resetting, strategic closures like Starbucks, but also this unexpected opportunity opening up for small local businesses and shopping centers.
Mm-hmm. A necessary realignment.
Meanwhile, major infrastructure assets, data centers, and quality real estate, especially anything benefiting from DFW's growth in that digital economy, they continue to command strong interest and, frankly, immense valuations.
That sums it up well. And for you, our listeners, especially those focused on DFW retail and development, the key takeaway really is understanding this opportunity shift. Meaning landlords are now heavily incentivized to be creative, to embrace adaptive reuse, to actually partner with unique local tenants like those Houston restaurateurs were asking for. Partner with them to drive foot traffic, create that destination appeal, and ultimately build that vertical value in their mixed-use projects.
So the most successful developers in DFW right now?
They're the ones who see retail not just as a rent line item, but as a crucial amenity for the entire project's success.
That's the actionable takeaway then. So here's a final thought for you to maybe mull over.
Okay.
If major tenants like Starbucks are actively shrinking their urban footprint to optimize for drive thrust, and if big institutional LPs are seeking lower risk debt over traditional equity and CRE right now, what existing DFW retail asset class might be most vulnerable now because it relies on maybe older, outdated formats?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
And conversely, which asset class is maybe best poised to deliver strong, long-term necessity-based returns precisely because it prioritizes those local, experience-driven services we've been talking about?
Something to definitely think about as you navigate this changing market.
Absolutely. Lots to consider.